Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
You know, obviously there is a natural thing of like, we need to keep the game going and so on. But the first thing is like, provide the bloody games. Provide the opportunity for kids to play.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up, we're going to be previewing Super Bowl 60 from 7:30. We're going to have Jeff Howe of The Athletic and Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe with us on the line. The subtext in the build-up to this has been two Hall of Fame snubs, one for Bill Belichick, which was extremely controversial, and then one for Robert Kraft, the team owner of the New England Patriots as well, which is less controversial, but Kraft has been on a big PR push over the last couple of years to get himself into the Hall of Fame. So that's going to dominate a big part of that discussion. We will, of course, preview the game this Sunday as well with the two lads. From 8 o'clock, it's our bumper Six Nations preview. So we recorded this at the RDS last Wednesday night. We've got Brian O'Driscoll, Andrew Trimble, Mike Tyndall, Andy Dunn and Alan Quinlan on that view. And then from 9 o'clock, the football show featuring Dion Fanning is coming your way. And we've got fresh quotes from the Czechia football manager Miroslav Kubek to get stuck into. He has spoken about the Republic of Ireland style of football as island football.
How dare he?
Outrageous. I can't even sit in the same room as you use that term.
Well, you've got 2.5 hours to calm down. 2 hours to calm down before I get your searing hot take on this. I think this is an insult.
Well, you're really trying to kind of, you're really trying to rile people up and make them think, have you ever been so insulted in your life? He's called us island football, people.
I mean, this is a call to arms. Consider this a siren going off on News Talk Radio tonight. We have been referred to as island football.
Rise up, island and non-islanders.
You picked the wrong part of British Isles to describe Irish football.
Yeah.
Usually everyone else goes for the first bit.
Yeah, there's nothing I hate more than landlocked privilege. Coming after us here in Ireland and criticising our football. So there's some box office quotes from him. There's some good stuff from Arne Slot in there. Some brilliant stuff from Pep Guardiola as well. I know we'll hear some of that in your news round this evening. Cameron Hill, whose voice you've heard, is here. Hello, Cameron.
Hello.
And Dion Fanning, as you can hear as well, is here for the news round as well. Dion, how are you doing?
Good, Owen. How are you?
Very well. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to get in touch. Six Nations fever, Dion? Is it gripping you?
It is. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to it. I do like international rugby matches, and I think it's one of the things I do like about it is just that sense of, you know, now it doesn't seem like a sensible thing to say this year with the weather we've had, but just that sense of, you know, evenings getting longer, spring is coming, and you know, Six Nations is, you know, it sort of symbolises that, whether you've totally invested in it or not, you know, it does actually come at the right time of year.
It is. I mean, look, we are in here until 10 p.m. obviously every night, Cameron, so we don't actually get to notice the grand stretch at all. It's only on weekends. I noticed on Bank Holiday Monday it was like 4:45 and it was still bright, but the Six Nations and the grand stretch go hand in hand.
Yeah, I've heard of that grand stretch thing. I really want to get acquainted with it at some point. I think you're right. I think even the sort of scheduling of the Six Nations, albeit with one less break week this year, it's always great because it takes you out of January basically and drops you off after Paddy's Day, and that's just a great sort of way to pass the time into mid-spring, and even that in its own right is a welcome change and a welcome distraction from everything. But I love this time of year. Everybody's so excited. There are about 4 or 5, maybe 6 teams who all feel they can go and actually win the whole thing and potentially get a grand slam, not to dismiss certain other nations. But I just enjoy the sort of fever pitch and the level of excitement that it throws up, and the build up all the way to Super Saturday, where it's just wall to wall rugby for the entire day and some brilliant matches and some crazy results. So tomorrow night, having it a day early, yes please.
Before we get to your top story, we do have some breaking news in the world of football tonight. Shocking news, in fact. The Athletic breaking this: Richard Keys and Andy Gray set to leave beIN Sports after current season. I mean, Dion, I know this is earth-shattering news and possibly destabilising for your weekend routine. What's your instant reaction to this?
I'm not that surprised, actually. There have been some, I had heard some suggestions about something like this might be happening. And it's, I think it's like, what, like, how do we, like the career of Richard Keys and Andy Gray, especially Richard Keys, has become kind of more and more fascinating, like since he kind of, you know, went into exile and, you know, clearly burned by what happened in England to him, decided he was just going to say what he really felt about everything, which wasn't always, you know, what you know. But okay, I was going to say it wasn't always what you wanted to hear. It was often what you wanted to hear, but it doesn't mean that you actually felt what you were hearing had any real moral weight or substance. But it was he became a compelling figure. Andy Gray then was a kind of like a lovable-ish sidekick, and you know it's kind of interesting how the dynamic shifted from when they were at Sky Sports, when Gray was the kind of seen as, you know, in the early 90s when Sky started the Premier League coverage, like Gray was seen the way Gary Neville and then Jamie Carragher were seen, as kind of breaking the mold in terms of analysis. And I don't know if anyone remembers that Boot Room program he used to do on Sky, and they got people on there for an hour talking tactics, and Eric Cantona went on at one time, and it was amazing. It was a brilliant program. But, you know, he sort of faded into kind of, as Keyes became this larger than life, slightly paranoid, very much of the age man, but full of, you know, veering close to conspiracy theories, tin hat on a lot of the time. Randy Gray couldn't really compete with that. So he kind of faded into the background. So All I ever see of them is the clips that, you know, get put out. With, you know, again, Richard Keys usually stealing the show. So, I will survive.
Yeah, I presume Richard Keys is just looking to focus on his blog full time. I presume that's the reason behind.
Well, yeah, but even his blog, when he gets, he's so bogged down in talking about VAR. Like it's when he just goes for some just totally unnecessary drive-bys. And takes some people out of it. You're just like, where did that come from? That's when it's at its peak. But it hasn't been like that for a while because he's just doing a kind of version of, you know, the Howard Webb, Michael Owen program going through last weekend's, you know, contentious decisions.
It's amazing. His most recent column, the headline is, come on, it's time to get some top refs into our league. Mm. Week after week after week, match after match after match. Now do you believe me? I've been a lone voice in the wilderness for years, but maybe not anymore. You know what I'm referring to? Of course, exactly. Refereeing standards in the Premier League and VAR operators, they're simply not good enough either, nowhere near good enough. And on it goes. That has been a constant theme. The previous one...
He's right, but like that's not the point.
Can you guess what his previous subject is? If it's not referees, what's his other least favourite subject?
Arteta.
Correct. Careful, Arsenal, but it's still yours to lose, was the headline on his previous piece. So, that is the breaking news from Qatar this evening, that that duo will not be on their screens any longer. Cameron, you are starting with the latest audio from the Ireland camp ahead of tomorrow night's clash with France.
Yeah, it's hard to know where to go after that bombshell announcement, but I will try. Ireland captain Caelan Doris insists that out-half Sam Prendergast is working hard to sharpen up the defensive side of his game. He's been picked ahead of Jack Crowley and Harry Byrne for tomorrow's Six Nations opener against defending champions France in Paris. Doris says he has a lot of faith in Prendergast, explaining how he's grown into his role within the squad.
Yeah, I mean, there's great competition amongst the tens, which is what we need. They're all relatively young and have good heads on them and are driving each other in the right direction, which is great for the group. Yeah, Sam's been great. Like, obviously, his defence has caught quite a bit of flack, but it's an area that, like, I'm in the same club as him in Leinster, and I see day-to-day the work he puts in, same here in camp. So that side of his game is improving. In terms of his attack, like, the ceiling is so high for him. He can do things that not many people can do at all. And he's getting more and more confident at leading the week and being another voice, especially guiding our attack. So, I've got a lot of faith in him and I'm looking forward to seeing him lead us around tomorrow.
There are no fresh injury concerns for head coach Andy Farrell following this morning's captain's run at the Stade de France. Ireland haven't beaten Les Bleus in Paris since 2018, the famous game of Le Drop.
Of course, there's a tone of optimism there in what Caelan Doris is saying, and I think it's worth noting that as the week has gone on, and to be fair, it's been a consistent tone throughout, you know, this international window when Andy Farrell was speaking around the team announcement and stuff like that as well, that there hasn't been any sense of doom. The doom is reserved for us, and the team itself are very positive.
Yeah, although as it gets closer, I'm starting to thaw out in terms of my optimism is starting to rise again in terms of what might be tomorrow night. Like, it is a it is a very strong, apart from obvious issues that have been litigated and relitigated in the front row, it's not a bad Ireland team by any means. Like, you still have real heft in that pack. You've got Jemison Gibson-Park and Sam Prendergast at 9 and 10, what they might be able to produce. Like, I think the fact that Stockdale's on the wing is a great indication of how Ireland are going to try and maybe attack France's backfield and their back three, particularly when it comes to kicks. Like, no one really has benefited more from how rugby has gone in terms of its emphasis on kicking than Jacob Stockdale. You only have to watch Ulster this year to see that. And that's always been the sort of question mark around Louis Bielbiaré and Damien Penaud. Obviously, he's not in this team, but even Théo Adesogbe struggled at times against England, particularly last year in the backfield. So I don't know. I think it's going to be closer. I still probably think France are going to edge it, but I don't think it's going to be the disaster in the way that, you know, it's been talked about, where we only deal in absolutes. If it's good, it's brilliant. If it's bad, it's going to be an absolute catastrophe in Paris tomorrow night. I think Ireland will acquit themselves well and give plenty of positives.
I think the idea of us not being overly confident kind of sits a little bit easier in the Irish psyche. I think the idea of expectation, particularly before World Cup, has often ended in calamity. I think I'm feeling pretty confident with the underdog tag
well,
here.
I'm going to shock you. I think Ireland are going to win. So there you go. Yeah. Forget this underdog stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, listen to Cameron.
We didn't need to hear that, Dion.
Made up my mind. I was like, he's dead right. This is a strong team. I'm really interested in the way people talk about Sam Prendergast. I know we talked about this before last year and what Andy Farrell sees in him. And that Irish, and it's not, you know, maybe it's an Ireland football problem, but it's not just Ireland, but that sense of looking at people and what they, you know, their weaknesses. And Farrell has clearly identified all the things that Prendergast can do, and that he can do certain things to an extremely good level, at a level that other people in that position can't come close to doing. And he's decided, and this is what we talked about before. Jurgen Klopp did very similar things at Liverpool in terms of Trent Alexander-Arnold, Andy Robertson, in terms of saying, I'm just interested in what they're going to do for me. I don't care about the other things. And he took the flak for it, and he was right. And I think Farrell has done the same thing with Prendergast and says, this guy, I know what, I can see what he can do, and what that is far superior, or is so good that the other stuff doesn't matter. And yet people, like, it's always, everything is framed in terms of, and you hear Caelan Doris talking about there in terms of, you know, what he's going to, you know, he's going to, you know, catch a lot of flack for his defending or whatever. And I think, you know, I think he's an exceptional player. And, you know, I looked at the team today. I hadn't seen a team, and I'd read all this stuff about how, what a terrible situation Ireland were facing into. And like, I looked at it and, you know, no, I'm not a huge follower of rugby, but I looked at it and went, that team, you know, I recognise most of the people on that team. That looks like a strong team to me. There's a lot of strong players there. And France are unpredictable. Ireland can win. Ireland will win.
There we go. The verdict is in. It's never going to be as bad as we make out, I think. I'm willing to go that far on a sincere level. Now,
being sincere.
Yeah, of course. So, we did put out a piece yesterday. But it was me rather than us. Making a ridiculous case for Ireland to win. Like, five ridiculous reasons why we can believe in it. And somebody on the Instagram comment said, maybe France forget that it's a Thursday game. No one shows up, and we get a walkover 48 hours until kickoff, and there's still hundreds of tickets available, which is actually a serious point. It does feel that there are lots of tickets available, and there was also a coterie of people giving out saying that I was being very disrespectful to Jacob Stockdale in that piece yesterday as well, so I'd like to apologise to everybody in Ulster. Speaking of disrespect, Mike's been in touch to say the fact that the Czechia manager feels the need to start throwing mind games in so early should give our boys a psychological boost. And then Block Caps, he says, we are in his head. And Leo says, well, we can hardly be accused of playing continental football now, can we? Which is a very fair point. We are what we are. We are an island, and island football is what
we
shall play.
It's the way he said it, Owen. It's the way he said it in those posts that I read.
It was a sneer in the voice. What have you got next for us, Cameron?
Well, Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola says he will always stand up when speaking out about conflict and suffering around the world. The 55-year-old missed last Friday's pre-match Premier League press conference a day after he spoke at a charity event in Barcelona in support of Palestinian children. Now, speaking ahead of tonight's EFL Cup semi-final second leg against Newcastle, he told reporters that he'd stand up against those defending violence.
He is not questioning about who's right or wrong. Every politician, right, left, right wing, left wing, can, of course, have to, everyone the ideas can do it that. But there is someone here that no effect will happen every single day. But today we see it, before we could not see it. Today we see it is not something, you touch something, it hurts me. For me, it hurts me. It would be the opposite side, it would hurt me. It would harm for another country, it hurts me. It's not about the position. So every argument, I'm sorry, this is my feeling. You can discuss when completely kill thousands of innocent people, it hurts me. It's no more complicated than that. No more.
We're going to do more on this on the football show with Dion after 9 o'clock. But in terms of this evening's meeting with Newcastle, Cameron, what have you got for us?
Well, of course, City hold a 2-0 lead ahead of that game at the Etihad Stadium tonight. Owen, the big team news from a City perspective is that Erling Haaland not in the first 11 tonight. He's been left on the bench tonight. So just go through those teams in full. James Trafford is in goal for City with a back four of Kusunov, Nunez, Nathan Ake and Ryan Aitnouri. In the midfield, you have Nico O'Reilly, Nico Gonzalez and Tiani Reinders. Then up front, it's Antoine Semenyo on the left, Phil Foden on the right. There had been doubts around whether he would start this game, and Omar Marmoush leads the line. Then for Newcastle, you've Ramsdale in goal. It's looking like a back three with Dan Burns, Sven Botman and Thiaw in the back three with Lewis Hull and Kieran Trippier on the wings. Sandro Tonali and Jacob Ramsey in the midfield, while Joe Willock and Anthony Gordon occupy the right and left wings respectively. Nick Valdemata up front.
You'd want to be a really terrible backup goalkeeper to not be getting your game in this competition. It's like wholesale changes are not the thing that are done in the semi-finals. I know there's obviously lots of high-profile outfield players for City there, but Aaron Ramsdale and James Trafford getting their opportunity tonight, much like Kepa last night for Arsenal.
Yeah, and I suppose Haaland being rested, is like you'd expect that in a competition like this, but also clearly he needs to sort of get something going with Haaland.
What's going on there?
It's hard to know whether he's just tired or what, but it's not like, you know, again, just those moments against Tottenham on Sunday when you kind of would expect Haaland to be lethal, and he hasn't been. It's kind of, you know, it's going on so long now that clearly something needs to, whether it's, you know, also a combination of the players he has around him now, whether he feels he's getting the ball the way he likes to get the ball. I think that's possibly got something to do with it as well.
Because at the start of the season, I mean, like, it was just a constant run of Alan Shearer making self-deprecating jokes about how Haaland is clearly going to usurp him. And now you're like, is Haaland definitely going to win the Golden Boot this year in the Premier League, never mind this overall Premier League goal scoring record?
No, I know. It's baffling what's going on and how he, you know, just as I said, these situations, you see Haaland and you expect like the next stage in what you're looking at is going to be Erling Haaland scoring, and it doesn't happen. You know, even, you know, those chances, those moments he had against Tottenham where he's through and you think, right, this is it now, and it doesn't happen. And I think, you know, as City fail to, and we'll probably talk about City later, but as they fail to kind of sustain a challenger, put real pressure on Arsenal, like, that's a key factor in it.
For sure. You've got a couple of other football bits for us here, Cameron?
Well, the FAI believes that the Aviva Stadium is in a strong position to host the 2029 UEFA Women's Champions League final. The association confirming today that it has submitted a preliminary bid to stage the showpiece game in European women's football. An initial expression of interest to host the event was submitted to UEFA last October, with a final bid submission to follow in early June. And Celtic's game away to Aberdeen this evening in the Scottish Premiership has been called off. The club confirmed the postponement of the game after a pitch inspection at Pittodrie this afternoon at 4 o'clock, following heavy rain in recent weeks. It means that Rangers can move to within 3 points of league leaders Hearts with a win at home to Kilmarnock tonight. That kicks off at Ibrox at 7:45.
Very sad news then in the world of snooker.
Yeah, the former snooker player and broadcaster John Virgo has died at the age of 79. He won four professional titles, including the UK Championship in 1979 as part of an 18-year playing career. Virgo was also well known as a commentator and for his role as presenter on the 1990 snooker show Big Break alongside Jim Davidson. Here he is introducing a future great of the sport, still then a teenager, back in 1994.
John, see how clever you are. What colour ball is this?
Blue.
So yellow.
Well, he's one of the bright new stars of snooker. One of the great talents, certain to be a future world champion, Ronnie O'Sullivan!
Now, Virgo spoke to Off the Ball's Shane Hannan back in 2019 at the Crucible, and he pinpointed the 70s as the period in which snooker surged in popularity.
I think snooker from its roots was a working class game. I mean, you can go back further than that when they had the temperance snooker clubs, and that was basically for people who were unemployed, you know, just after the 1926 general strike, a temperance club where they could go and like a community centre, you know. So that is the sort of grassroots of snooker. But for it to become as popular as it did, I don't think anyone ever imagined that. You know, we remember the days of Joe Davis playing on Grandstand and all that. But I think colour television, as I say, was very important because the colours, you know, the green bays and the different colours of the balls, that's what added to it. And then the BBC getting involved with Pot Black. And then that attracted people. And then we got, as I say, the likes of Alex Higgins. And then we've had Jimmy White since, which was a offshoot of that, if you like, and then Ronnie, who's carrying on that great tradition of not only playing the game but making it look exciting. But when you look back at the 70s, I remember when I won the UK Championship, my first prize was £4,500, and my pal said, "You'll never be skint again." But he was wrong, I promise you.
This is a brilliant interview. You can listen back to that wherever you get your Off the Ball podcast. We're going to play a longer chunk of this before 9 p.m. tonight as well. John Virgo, something that is inseparable from the snooker coverage on TV, Dion.
Yeah, and I think listening to that interview, just that sense of, you know, that when snooker ruled the world feeling of when, you know, that it did rise. And I can remember John Virgo doing those, he used to do these sort of trick shot routines where he would impersonate other snooker players going around the table, then he would impersonate everybody. And that was kind of part of that, you know, golden era. And then, you know, the commentary in later years, like snooker obviously doesn't have the same grip as it once did, but it's still that some of us who, you know, I get sucked in definitely to the World Championships. You know, I watch a little bit of the UK Masters as well, and the way he talks about it too is true. Like, it was this great, you know, in the heartland of snooker being in places like Blackburn and places like that in England. It was a great working class kind of sport where people, you know, like it had real meaning for an awful lot of people. And Virgo was the kind of, was the link between, you know, a lot of that and, you know, and then the fact that he was, you know, a commentator for so long and just a presence. Like, it's kind of shocking. Like, he's seeing, you know, I was watching some of the Masters and he was commentating on it, and, you know, he's still, you know, his catchphrase, "Where's the cue ball going?" Like, that was there, you know, and you just, you know, that thing about a commentator, especially in a sport where you don't see very much, and their voice remains strong and has the same presence and the same life. And, you know, so then you kind of, it's kind of a bit of a, you're a bit stunned when you hear news like this.
It's so funny because his other catchphrase is "pot as many balls as you can." And in that interview with Shane, he explains that, like, that comes from the producers of Big Break telling him, "No, Jim Davidson's the star, by the way. So you just have to kind of rein in your personality and keep it very monosyllabic and simple." So it's an interestingly ironic twist that becomes a very iconic phrase, but also just the nature of having someone like John Virgo on that show and him becoming this breakout star following that even again, that, you know, you wouldn't hem in the sort of what you would call the kind of colour commentator talent these days. Like, they would be front and centre, whereas back then you were just, you're there to add prestige, but just look pretty in the background was sort of the approach they took to those sorts of things.
Yeah, really interesting. So, as I say, check out that full piece. Absolutely worth your time if you've got even a passing interest in the life of John Virgo and snooker through the ages. Dion Fanning, thank you very much for popping in for the news round. You're going to be back from 9 o'clock for the football show. Cameron Hill, thank you for tonight's news round. We're going to take a break, and after the break, we'll be bringing you our Super Bowl preview with Jeff Howe and Dan Chocknessy. Remember, our bumper Six Nations preview is coming up after 8 o'clock, and then the football show, where we'll go deep on Miroslav Kubek's Island football comments after 9 o'clock. Our number is always
calm down.
Our number is 0879 180 180. It's time for the cash machine.
Off the ball.